Mic check. Mic check.
Okay, we'll call the Legacy and Budget Stabilization Fund Advisory Board to order. Clerk will call the roll.
Chairman Kempinick.
Here.
Representative Kite.
Here.
Senators Klein.
Here.
Dotsenrod.
Here.
Mr. Hardemeyer. Mr. Morissette. Mr. Rauschenberger. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Consideration of the minutes for the May 24th and 27th meetings. We need a we need a roll call. Okay, just voice votes. Okay, those all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Okay, motion passes. Okay, I guess basically we're just going to have kind of just a meet in the letter of the law, and then have Mr. Hunter give us just kind of a presentation of where we're at, and go from there.
Blue light on?
Nope. There we go. Sorry about that. Does everybody have a copy of the presentation? If not, I'd be happy to
hand out a few more. All good?
For the record, my name is Dave Hunter. I serve as the Executive Director and Chief Investment Officer for the Retirement Investment Office. With me today, I have Connie Flanagan, our Chief Financial Officer, and Darren Schultz, our Deputy CIO. I'm going to provide an update on the Budget Stabilization Fund and Legacy Fund. On page 4 of the handout, we have an overview of the Budget Stabilization Fund. The asset allocation is nearly 100% short-term fixed income, with about $114 million in the fund as of September 30th, 2018. On page 5 shows a comparison of actual net investment returns versus the policy benchmark for the 1, 3, and 5-year periods ended 9/30/2018. For the 5 years ended September 30th, 2018, Budget Stabilization Fund generated an annualized return of about 1.3%, surpassing its policy benchmark by about 0.6%. For the 1 year ended 9/30/2018, only earned about 0.32%. That's really a function of the rise in short-term rates that's taken place over the last 12 to 24 months. You'll see for the quarter ended September 30th, 2018, highlighted with the green downward arrow, we actually earned 0.38% in the third quarter, calendar quarter of this year, surpassing what we earned all of last year. On the next page, just a brief overview. I think everybody's aware of this, but if you look at the chart, the big chart just shows the Fed funds rate over the past 30 to 40 years. We've had a lot of rate moves. Actually, we had three in 2018, three upward rate adjustments in 2017, in addition to one each in 2016 and 15. There's a high expectation that there'll probably be another rate rise by the Fed in December 2018, but we'll see. Just from a historical perspective, the Fed funds reached an all-time high of 20% back in March of 1980 and reached a low of 0.25% in December 2008. If you look at the inset, you can see where the rates have really gone up over the past couple of years, from a 0 to 0.25% up to about 2.25% as of now. And that's really what's kind of impacted our returns over the past year. Having said that, it should work well for us over the course of the next year or two, at least. Short-term fixed income rates are probably going to be more in a 1.5 to 2% range in the foreseeable future, depending upon how the economy goes, which should serve to significantly enhance our returns over the course of the next year or two.
Yes. Dave, on this year, yeah, it hasn't been produced, since this fund's been, it hasn't really been a major factor. I mean, it's been at least kind of with your management, the management that's been in it and stuff, it's been, at least we've been beating the benchmark. But
yes.
When you start looking at, and granted this is a budget stabilization fund, when you start looking at it, is there any indication of what you can plan on this or anything like that? Or is it just, we just take it? I mean, because of what the Fed's actions, it looks like they're wanting to keep going up and stuff on it. Is there any action?
Sure.
We'll get into this conversation
yes.
with the legacy too, but I just wanted to
So if you look at this page four, just briefly, at the very bottom, it's the budget stabilization funds asset allocation reflects a very risk-averse, highly liquid risk adjustment. So that actually carries over to our investment policy statement. So if you look at our investment policy statement, it has a minimum allocation to short-term fixed income of at least 90%. Based upon that kind of very rainy day fund type of allocation, this is kind of the returns we can expect. I just want to show you a comparison though between the 1 and the 5 year return. So if you look at the page 8 and you look at the bottom, you can see that short-term fixed income, the actual return, kind of the third numbered column over from the left, generated a net return of 0.39%. Okay, for the 1 year ended versus cash and cash equivalents, if we just hold on cash, would have earned 1.42% over the last year. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a function of the sharp rise in rates, particularly at the short end of the curve over the past year. If I could have you advance to the next page, you'll see just the inverse of that. You'll see that when rates were going down or perhaps more stable, you saw that where the short and short-term fixed income rates generated net return about 1.38% and cash was less. So given kind of what's transpired over the last 12 to 18 months with rates, particularly on the short end, and where we sit at rates now, we have a moderate degree of confidence that we're probably going to earn closer to that 1.5% to 2% in this budget stabilization fund for the near future. Things change as the Fed makes rate changes, but that's kind of a near-term rate forecast. If there's a desire for this committee or for the governing folks to want to entertain a higher return seeking goal, we'd have to take that into consideration, go to the State Investment Board and work towards adopting a more return seeking, a less risk averse investment policy statement.
Well, one of the things in the committee, we're getting into where we're kind of last session kind of brought, I think one of the concerns was early on when there was a lot of fund, basically oil revenue, but that was flowing in and it was being spent and our general fund was rising quite a bit faster and we did it to our last session. It basically came, 3 years ago, this all came to a head. Now we've dropped this back down again, triggering, and this is a conversation we'll have to have, I think this session is that, okay, the mechanisms that trigger this budget stabilization fund have kind of become more, I'm not going to say predictable, but when you lower your expectations down, it becomes actually trying to, that this would be used anytime soon because we're more risk adverse, just on the spending side of the coin, then it becomes, is this fund functioning the way it should, because are we going to be using it like we did, and it showed how fast things disappear. We had over $600 million last session that this fund, actually 3 years ago, it was the year before the session started, that, basically there was $600 million just disappeared within a short period of time. And so that's what, now we're at a different level again, we're rebooted basically, and now we're at a different level again. And that's what I think we're going to have a discussion about this, we wanted liquid, but how much better could we do, if we have something, because even the function of it, and Joey, and correct me if I'm wrong, but even the function of that, it's more that it has to be available. It isn't that it needs to be liquid. It isn't going to be, there's probably a function of 8 to 10 months that needs to be liquid. It doesn't need to be liquid the day we say, the legislature, because that's where I think there gets to be kind of a confusion between appropriations and actual spending. And I think that's one of the things we had long conversations with Pam when she was in your position, and stuff on it. And that, I think, they want to, and they're probably going to have to get more of a definition of what liquid means, because it's got to be available, but if we can have it available like within the year or something like that, as far as suspend, rolling it out and stuff on it. But I think we're going to have to do a little research on that to see if we can do a little better. And then the other thing is there's projected ending fund balance of about 171 somewhere in there, million or somewhere in there on it. And my understanding is that half of that goes into this fund too. It is.
Mr. Chairman, anything over $65 million goes into that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it'd be, okay.
So whatever that amount is.
Okay. So anyways, that's another thing we're going to have a conversation about too, because there will be a little more, you know, or either or. I mean, there's things that, you know, it's all in statute, so that might change too. But there's some, you know, there's some things that are going here, and that's why I didn't think this meeting needed to be real in depth.
Okay.
You know, we need to touch bases, but that's some of the things I can see that we're going to have to be looking at here. And we'll probably have another meeting sometime during the session here of this committee to kind of talk about some of that, where we're going with it. So I won't take any more of your time.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, so just briefly touching on the investment policy statement on page 11, 12, 13. 13 is really where it focuses on the asset allocation. So if there was a desire by the advisory committee to work with the state investment board, subject to SIB approval, to change the asset allocation, to adopt a more return seeking, this is where it would come to come to fruition, is looking at changing that short-term fixed income allocation minimum of 90% to a lower amount. So, and we can look forward to the discussions with that and providing the state investment board an update here in the upcoming weeks and months.
Yep. Go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chairman and Dave, but
yes.
In your opinion, you watch this, you understand, you know, we need it kind of liquid, but yet to commit to a longer term, it'll be difficult to find something, won't it? I mean, when you're talking 1.5 to 2%, I think we're that's pretty gravy money now with a fund that, it's kind of like my savings account. I'm finally glad that they raised it a point.
Me too.
But don't we have to be concerned about that? I know we as legislators have a tendency to think we certainly want the most bang for our buck, but are we not crossing a path here where we got to be somewhat careful? Because certainly we always want more, but we still want it. We need it in the bank when it's time. I guess the question I'm saying is, are you comfortable with where we're at now, and do you see us being able to leap over this particular investment strategy to make more money, but to do so within that short window that we need?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Senator Klein, I'm comfortable with the asset allocation as it stands today, but I obviously understand that this is a rainy day fund and we want it to be liquid and available. Having said that, we live in a dynamic environment. Conditions change every time. We're heading into legislative session. We're going to get updates on kind of funds flows into this. And whenever we have any type of investment pool, be it a budget stabilization fund or a legacy fund, if there are big changes in kind of deposits or distributions or long-term expectations of what the fund should be used for, then we should sit down and take a look at the investment policy statement. Historically, this has been a rainy day fund. And when you think of a rainy day fund, you think of highly liquid, short-term, very risk-averse, and that's how it's been set up. Having said that, we all can always sit down and re-examine and say, can we get a little better return expectation going forward? I just want to make the committee aware that short-term rates have risen significantly over the last 12 to 24 months. That should allow us to earn closer to 1.5 to 2% going forward, which isn't bad. But if there's a desire to do more, we just got to weigh that opposite, kind of the rainy day fund feature of the budget stabilization fund.
Any other questions? Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the next one will be the legacy fund. So on page 16, we just have the statement of net position and changes in net position as of September 30th, 2018. And the blue arrow on the bottom left, you'll see we had close to $5.9 billion as of September 30th, 2018. If you jump to the right side, you'll see at the bottom right, as of the date of these financial statements, which is September 30th, 2018, the legacy fund had transferable earnings as defined under North Dakota Century Code 2110-12 of $306.5 million. Again, that earnings definition includes net realized gains and losses and excludes unrealized gains and losses. So I'll just pause for a second.
Okay. Well, there's a conversation going on that conversation on gains realized and unrealized and the volatility of it. And I think the governor's office has become aware of it. And we were aware of it when we introduced the bill to put this in language. We didn't have this in. This came came from the other chamber when it got done. And so that's something we're going to have to talk about this session. I mean, I'm hoping that this whole conversation of how we do this earnings thing gets kind of settled here this session, because it is, now we're starting to rely on it, and it's we're going to have some numbers that are realistic, you know, and stuff on it. You know, looking at the bottom here, 306 is, you know, but that could be lost by this time next year. Well, by June 30th, it could not be there yet, or it could be gone. And so we're going to have to analyze or look at what we want to do with this and stuff on it. But right now we're in the positive side. We appropriated $200 million, and that was, you know, like I said, that's where it gets to be interesting, is appropriations. And appropriations doesn't mean there's dollars there. It just means that there's a number on a piece of paper that says that's what we want. But we're going to have to get where what we put on that on out of this fund, I think, is going to have to be some actual dollars that are spendable dollars and stuff on it. So
go ahead, Chairman. So I understand this better. If we could tap the legacy earnings, it would be $306 million is what we could. It's sitting there somehow that we could, as of today.
As of September 30th, so these are historical financial statements, is about $306 million. In that definition, which includes interest and dividend income, it also includes net realized gains and losses. That is $306 million. If I could ask the committee to flip to page 39, where, sure, we have kind of a little summary of this. There's kind of two components highlighted on page 39, one in green and one in blue. Blue is the definition in North Dakota Century Code Earnings 2110-12 as discussed, and includes the net realized gains and losses. If you hop up a little bit in that page, you'll see highlighted in green the $132 million. So that's net interest, dividend, and other income. That excludes the volatility that happens when you have market corrections, such as we experienced in October. So if the committee was under the consideration of adopting a less volatile number in the future, they could use something like net interest, dividend, and other income, which is $132 million for the 15 months ended September 30th, 2018. If you just extrapolate that number out to 24 months, it would actually come out to a little over $210 million. So hopefully that gives a little bit better understanding of it.
So, Mr. Chairman, so I understand that no matter what the market does, that next at the end of this biennium, we do have we have $132 million that we can grasp.
As of September 30th, based upon just interest and dividend income, right? So interest and dividend income is pretty consistent.
That will stay solid.
Yes.
But when we talk about the 306, that's the fluffy stuff that we don't know necessarily, depending on the market, could crush our hopes and dreams. But the 132 is a solid number.
Yes, it's interest and dividend income that intends to accrete gradually over time. It's not subject to necessarily market corrections, such as realized gains and losses are. So that's, if you kind of walk through that sheet, you can see where that.
But because of our great strategy, the thought of having 306 is pretty should be a solid number, because the way we've invested wisely in all these different asset allocations will make that number come to fruition.
I'm hopeful, Senator Klein.
I like that, hopeful.
I'm hopeful, but I just have to acknowledge that we have a 50% equity allocation, right? And we experienced a 7% decline in the S&P 500 in the month of October alone. It was even a little bit worse in the international market. Small caps had even a worse impact. So whenever you're including realized gains and losses in your allocation, your definition of earnings, you have volatility. So if you were to look at that North Dakota Century Code earnings as of October 31st, it would be less than $305 million, probably about $20 million less based upon our last analysis.
And I see you got 14 on the front page there that we were behind on you had a parenthesis, you were subtracting some on that, the first page.
On the first page of page 30.
Investment income
16.
For month ended,
Page 16. Oh, yes, that is correct. Let me go back to that page. Bear with me as I flip back. Yeah, so that just goes to show you, in the month of September, the net investment income was actually declined think that says $15 million.
Yeah, about 15.
Because we have both realized and unrealized gains and losses in that number. So, right?
Thank you.
Yep. Very good.
Yep. Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Just following on that question, Dave, is the 306, is that dollar amount segregated and separated from the principal of the fund? Is it setting off to the side, segregated?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Dotson-Rod, it is part of the investment pool. So we are not taking any portion of the $306 million in quote unquote segregating. It's always fully invested. So.
No, the reason I asked that, it said earnings accrued prior to June 30th become part of the principal of the fund, which would indicate to me, what about the earnings after June 30th? It looks like they're all becoming part of the principal of the fund.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Dotson-Rod, so you have kind of two components that are going through here. If you look at page 24, you'll see a roll forward from inception to date or through September 30th. So what ended up happening is as of September 30th, 2017, their earnings that accrued prior to July 1, 2017, actually became principal into that. So that $306.5 million highlighted in green kind of in the center of that page, that's North Dakota Century Code earnings that's been generated from July 1st, 2017 through September 30th. So there were earnings as defined by North Dakota Century Code prior to that, but those were put into principal because they were accrued earned prior to July 1, 2017. I believe that hopefully that addresses your question. Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's probably part of the Senator Dotson-Rod brought up, but I think it's part of what, you know, people are looking at, you know, outside are looking at total earning, you know, we
yes.
look at the total, you know, the earnings and stuff. I know it was in the paper last meeting in July there, I think, you know, is somewhere over a little over $1 billion and stuff on it, you know, and I think that's what gets kind of a confusing conversation and stuff, because we basically reset here now going forward, because that money wasn't available. I mean, that went into that was in the Constitution, and that was that is not available. So that becomes part of the corpus of the fund, and I think that's where we're. And I think that was even last session. I think there was a lot of misunderstanding, you know, because they're looking at past. You know, it's you sounded like an investment commercial. Past results are not indicative of future earnings, you know, type thing, and that's what.
Could have been with Fisher.
Yeah. So that's what, but that does get to be the conversation. Go ahead,
and
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, and Dave, that brings me to a discussion I just had yesterday with someone who told me that, oh, we have $481 million. And I said, you know, is that with North Dakota Century Code? No, we only have $306 million that we could use. The $481 is the net investment. But it's not the money that we are going to extrapolate and put into to spend.
That's correct, Senator.
So I think yep. Representative Kaepernick points that out, that some of us are some. There are some who suggest that there's $481 or $500 million nearly ready to go. But it's the 306 that potentially is really the solid number that we have to be looking at.
Yep. That, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Klein, that is the difference. That difference between the 306 and the 481 is unrealized, net unrealized gains and losses. So if you, again, you look at page 24, you look at the second column, it says total net earnings highlighted in light blue at the very bottom. Life to date net earnings, including unrealized gains and losses, is a little over $1.2 billion. And as you said, in this biennium was $481 million that has been earned. But again, that includes both realized and unrealized gains and losses. If you back out the unrealized gains and losses, it's down to $306.5 million, as currently defined by North Dakota Century Code.
See, and that's the problem we got from when these sure. numbers were printed. There's basically 8 months. You know, we got in October and November weren't pretty months. So you got, you know, we'll have 6 months by December. It's been watching. It looks like it's a little more stable. It hasn't really gone up much, but we're still, for the year, it's just barely broke even with today's numbers. And so we got 6 months of unknowns yet, you know, and stuff on there. There's a lot of outside See, that's the thing is, I guess, and that's, you know, as long as we're talking about it, that becomes, you know, the quote unquote, you know, black swan or whatever, you know, they call it. But what, you know, do we have in place something that we can do, or what is a defensive strategy, I guess? And that's something, you know, we aren't going to get into today, but I think we're going to have to kind of look at what is a defensive strategy. You know, we've tried to set up, like, you know, we've tried to guess on some of our allocations on inflation and stuff, which hasn't realized, you know, but do we have something that we can make money going in a down, going into a down market or having a down market? Because it, we are rolling, you know, even Vegas is start, you know, I mean, this 10 years now of an uptrend, you know, on it. And so just the law of average is going to suggest that this is going to, you know, isn't probably going to climb forever and stuff on it. And actually it's been pretty good, but I don't know if we're going to get to 36,000 Dow or not, you know, and stuff on it. I mean, it looks like that's probably going to be, you know, but what is something that if we do take a 25% hit, you know, is there something that, you know, I mean, you're going to lose on some, but is there something that we can do that can, you know, as a strategy or that we at least know about, you know, and stuff on it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, so obviously in May we went through an asset allocation study in which we decided on one hand we want to be conservative, on the other hand we're return seeking, and that's how we agreed to affirm our current asset allocation policy of 50% equities, 35% fixed income. 35% fixed income is a pretty good allocation to downside market protection if you compared it to other types of funds like this. Having said that, we still have a 50% equity allocation. So over any defined two-year time period, we're going to, at some point in time in the future, we're going to experience losses. It's going to, sooner or later, there's going to be a market correction. We're not trying to time the market. We're long-term investors. We've been fortunate to benefit from a pretty positive bull market over the last 8 to 10 years. And in the event that there were a market correction, we feel confident that our 35% fixed income should provide good ballast versus that kind of unfortunate event. We also have 15% invested in diversified real assets, including some fixed income and in what we call treasury inflation protected securities, which are also pretty conservative as well. So it is a pretty conservative overall risk asset allocation for a portfolio trying to attempt a 6% return overall, but it is not set up to necessarily address a major market downturn. So.
But go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, but Dave, we're not sitting on our hands thinking about this. We're ahead of, I mean, you guys, well, as an investment board, we're working to make sure that you understand the future, you understand what Representative Kempenick said, that, you know, we could have a major correction, but that's all taken into consideration when you plot your hour, the direction we're going with these, is it not?
Yes.
I mean, it's not like you're not somebody's not thinking about it in that team of experts that are working on asset allocations.
So Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Senator Klein. So we set back and we see we have a long-term asset allocation. That's how we're going to invest. We're going to try to outperform in an up market. We're going to try to outperform a benchmark in a down market. It doesn't mean we're going to make money in a down market. So I'm hopeful that if you look at page 18, for the 1, 3, and 5 years periods ended September 30th, 2018, we've been fortunate to generate about anywhere from a half to a little over 1% of above benchmark returns. It's our hope, it's our belief, it's the way we've attempted to structure a portfolio that if in the unfortunate event the markets were to be down by 5%, hopefully we would be down less than 5%, maybe 4.5%. So it doesn't mean that we're not going to experience loss in a down market. It's hopeful, considering how we've done in the past, that we'll continue to do a little bit better, maybe 0.5% better than the overall market. So really kind of hard to be hedge fund-like and kind of specifically set up for a down market in a long-term 6% return-seeking portfolio.
Yeah. See, and that's one thing, you know, and that's another conversation, because it does become just what you brought up was a hedge, you know, hedge the future and stuff. And one of the things, you know, and this is going to, not so much with this fund, but it's, it got brought up at a meeting we were at the other night in Medora, and I know these, and it isn't the first time it's been brought up, but hedging oil, you know, and stuff, because the state is getting so dependent on a cash flow, and you knew that, I knew this when you deal with that. They've been out in the old patch. You've been, you know, over the years, and it always gets to be, you see families that get an oil well. They might get two or three oil wells, and pretty soon their standing or living is four times what it was when before they had the oil well. And then pretty soon the family's gone. You know, I mean, they might have some money, but they're no longer in North Dakota. You know, they just, it splits, because when things get to be a tight conversation, then it gets to be problems. And that's what I'm trying to figure out, is how we can minimize, you know, and that's what we've tried to do with our allocations, is minimize the impacts. If we can stay as close to zero in a bad market, that, you know, that is a win. It is on it, but it's we're going to have to explain it too. And that's what's going to be the communication effort's going to have to ramp up better than it has been. You know, I mean, it's nice when we're gaining, sure. It's hard, you know, people are just, they get, you know, kind of apathetic about it. But if you start losing, then it's going to get to be where, you know, if you got to start explaining, you're losing. And that's what gets to be, you know, and stuff on it. And that's why, you know, I think, like I said, right now, I think we'll hit our benchmark, or what we appropriated anyways. I think people are hoping for more, you know, and stuff on it, but I think we'll hit that. But it does get to be where, you know, there, you know, 2 years ago, 200 million looked like that was a pretty conservative number. Now it's probably going to be, you know, we'll probably beat it, but it's going to be a lot tighter than what a lot were thinking and stuff on it. So that's what I just want to bring up, the concerns and stuff about what I'm hearing anyways and stuff.
Understood. Just to echo again, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we have a 50% equity allocation. We will lose money when there is a major market correction. Our goal is to lose less than the market overall. So if we can beat it by 0.5%, that's pretty good. That's what pays dividends over the long term. And we've been fortunate to have been blessed with pretty strong returns on a, not only on an absolute basis, but on a relative basis, by about 0.5% to 1% over the last 1-3-5 year period ended 9/30/2018. So Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I will go through a few more slides here if it pleases the committee. Yeah. So page 19, this is just a kind of a summary of, people always ask, well, how do we derive our benchmarks? And it's based upon very widely used indices. And if you just, you know, for the 1 year ended 9/30/2018, our policy benchmark was about 5.5%, and it was a function of 50% equities, which earned a little over 11% over the last year. A 35% allocation to fixed income, which actually lost 1.2%. That was, again, was a function of a rising rate environment. So we try to make it an all-weather portfolio. So equity markets were great. Fixed incomes were a little bit more challenged. That's why we lost 1.22% in our fixed income portfolio. I shouldn't say that. We actually made money in our fixed income portfolio, but the benchmark was actually down 1.22%. And then the rest, 15%, is in global Treasury inflation protected securities and real estate, which generated a net return of about 2%. So that's how we got to our 5.51% for the September 30th period. So I'll just pause. There's a lot of information there, but.
Yeah. Well, I've been watching like the Alaska Permanent Fund, you know, they're different than us, you know, in their allocations and stuff, but I know that's been up and, you know, they've been, and they're a little more riskier, I gotta say that and stuff on it. But this is, like I said, if we can hold, you know, long term, that's the whole conversation.
Yes.
Piece is, this is a long term, and that's what, but the problem is it's long term as long as it's in a 2 year window.
Yes.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, and that's what makes it challenging. You know, and that's why early on we did away, I know the first year, you know, basically we was all bonds and yep. And the first 2 years, and then we were trying to figure out how to carve out 15% all the time on an investment strategy, and it was a committee's decision to do away with trying to carve out that 15%, because you're never going to do it, you know, I mean, because it's a moving number, so how can you invest, and so that's why that didn't, we decided just invest it and we'll deal with it when the time comes and stuff on it. And now we're at the where the time comes as far as the earnings go and how that's going to be invested and how much. And I know I was kind of hoping Eric would be here, but I know there's bills coming in to in basically bond against money. And truthfully, in a way, I got to see what they look like. I'm not against that per se, but if they get pretty aggressive, then you're going to have to, then we're going to have a larger conversation. But I know there's a lot of demands for this, you know, and stuff on it too. So it's going to be an interesting, you know, I mean, I'm hoping this session that we get some settled policy with this fund. So if there's any comments, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just add to your comments that sitting in our caucus, everybody commented about what we should be doing this session and what they're hearing from home. And I was the last one to speak, and I didn't have anything to say because I said everyone has already spent all the legacy money. Because that's a conversation that came up over and over and over and over and over again. You know, my concerns, once again, are concerns as we hear it here. And I'm using the analogy that if the transmission goes out in your car, you don't go to your financial advisor and say, I want to take some money out of my 401 so I can replace the transmission. Because that he would tell you you're stupid. And that's where I'm going with the fact that people who want to take money out of our investment to provide just to cover, you know, a gap here or a gap there. It's to me, it's troubling, but I don't know, you know, I'm only one member. But certainly I think it's going to be more of a challenge as we deal with and talk about principal and moving that around. Now, there's also the argument that if we don't do anything, there's going to be an initiated measure. And my argument is, they said that when we created the Heritage Fund and we had an initiated measure. They said that when we passed ethics and political election changes and we had them. So no matter what we do here, I still think whatever the people do, that's what we do in North Dakota. Well, that's what people from across the country think North Dakota should do, because in this last time we found out we have a lot of issues that come in from outside the state. So I guess my biggest concern is, and we talked about that at one of the meetings when we had the folks come in and talk about what happens when we take principal. And the $300 million, I recall, the number was the hit to the fund by just borrowing that out of there. Well, we're not borrowing it, we're just taking it. So I guess, how do you envision, your strategy would be X, Dave?
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Klein, I guess I'm blessed to just get to deal with the investment aspect of it as opposed to the spending policy. But having said that, just basic principles, the longer we can continue to save, the ability to create a truly differential to create intergenerational equity for the state just makes a heck of a lot of sense. Having said that, I understand you got to balance the needs of the current versus the future, and that's challenging. But when we were doing our projections with Callan's assistance and looking how much, you know, how large the fund would grow over time with relatively modest pulls of, returns from the fund from an earnings standpoint, it turned out to be a pretty positive story over the long term. So.
Representative Craig.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I probably said this over the years, but, I look at the legacy fund as money that really isn't there. Because if we wouldn't have done this initiated measure, that money would have been spent. We wouldn't have that money. I can understand using the earnings off of the investment that we have right now, but, I mean, I don't know, you know, what's going to happen on the House side, but I definitely am very much against tapping into the principal at any time and into the future. That fund is, as far as I'm concerned, is there to build. You know, we had a very good return on investments. We're using some of that money, which is fine. But I will fight if we try to take money out of the principal. I just don't agree with that at all at this point.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senators of the committee, right, so we're at, somewhere between $5.5-6 billion now. Assume that gets up to $10 billion in the future, and we're fortunate to earn 3 or 4% per year. That's $600-800 million per biennium, just on the earnings component of it. That's pretty significant.
Well, committee, I think the first conversations, and I think most of you have been on, on the committee. Maybe Joe and Jim, you were on the original committee. Ryan, I know you came in, but I think the understanding when this got passed was that it was a perpetual fund. I mean, it was basically something long into the future. It wasn't something that was just a fund that was going to be here for a short period of time and then disappear, because it goes back, like I said, living out and seeing families you have to live within your means of what is your means and stuff on it. There's no doubt about it. But it, as this type of stuff goes on, and I mean technology is changing the way this development is taking place, but it's still, you look, you know, we're really going to saddle our kids with grandkids with a lot of problems if we don't manage this right, because as this changes, your lifestyle is going to be at a level that, and we're seeing that even today with our general collections on taxes and stuff like that, that you, the general population, I seen a study the other day that looks like we might hit 1 million people here in 10 years, you know, whether we do or not. You know, that's one thing that keeps, you can keep increasing, but the only way you're going to do that is have a stable environment for other industry or other things to come in. You aren't going to tax them. These national meetings I've been to here the last couple of years, get to be this one in Chicago this spring, the conversation, it didn't even apply to us. Their whole conversation got down to bonding and raising more taxes. I mean, you aren't going to keep a population stable or grow a population that has that type of attitude. And that's one of the things that we're running, going to run into if we don't manage this right.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Dave, one more time. What I just hear you say, that if we allow the fund to grow to $10 billion and a return of 3% would provide how many dollars?
So $10 billion times 3% is $300 million per year times two years in a biennium, so $600 million. So if it was 4%, it'd be $800 million. So it's just, when you allow, you know, early on, just like when you're saving for retirement, the money you save early on in your life just has incredible compounding effects. It just allows it to grow. Having said that, I realize the challenges that we face as a state. So
thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Dave, I just have a question. It's more of a procedural question. When I was looking at page 39, you know, realizing that more than half comes from the net realized gains and losses as opposed to interest, dividends, and other income, you know, that takes an action for somebody to say divest this to realize those earnings or losses. Who actually signs off on those divestitures to realize that? Is it just the funds that are managing it? Do you have to sign off on that? Is there a chain of command? I'm not as familiar with that. I don't serve on the other investment boards. And just because it's the lion's share of what we're looking at statutorily is, at this point, general fund money, unless that changes and it's dedicated, I'm just curious about how that happens. And does that change as we get closer to the end of a biennium?
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tax Commissioner Ryan Rauschenberger, our investment managers that we selected are there to, we chose them to be the best investment managers in their asset class. Part of that decision is how they decide when to hold an unrealized gain versus crystallize or, you know, realize an actual gain. So our investment managers do that. We're blessed with, you know, $5.5 to $6 billion of funds. When you're talking about $300 million, that's a relatively small component, 4.5-5%. So it doesn't cause me any grave concerns because we know our investment managers are seeking to maximize returns over the long term, and that's the best risk-adjusted return philosophy we want to have. So hopefully that addresses your question.
Mr. Chairman, Dave, I think that does. I guess just my point is, over half of what we're relying on and realizing based on the definition is based on somebody's action and opinion of potentially liquidating or divesting, as opposed to just your standard interest and earnings and letting that flow. And it's just more of a, to get my head around, you know, what we're relying on going forward and some of the risks that can offset. If they feel on June 15th that we have a huge market correction and the best decision for the fund, not necessarily for realized earnings, but the best decision for the fund in general is to divest a lot of equities and we realize a lot of losses. That offsets that 132 on June 15th. And I'm just looking at it from a risk-averse perspective that the fund managers are looking at it from the best for the long term of the fund and the principal and overall earnings, or are they looking to maximize realized earnings in this sense? Because I look at them as two different things.
Sure.
Because on June 15th, you could go, we need to make sure there's enough there on June 30th, as opposed to let's let this wait a month. I don't know where the mindset is. I don't, you know, I don't deal with them. But I'm looking at it from, there are individuals out there that can, right at the end of a biennium, after the legislature's gone, make those kinds of decisions that wipe that out. So purely from a risk acknowledgement, I would just have those questions about what their overall goal and purpose is, as opposed to necessarily who, I guess, who signs off on it, but their overall mission.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tax Commissioner Ryan Rauschenberger, we've given no investment managers any type of direction to say, try to do something as of June 15th or June 30th. We're long-term investors. So we sit back and say, do it for the long term. I think it gets back to the question that the chairman brought up earlier, and perhaps others, is just, you know, perhaps there's a definition in North Dakota Century Code 2110-12 that has a significant component of it based upon a realized number that causes a little more volatility to the number over a defined two-year time period.
Well, and go ahead, Mr.
And I just want to say, Mr. Chairman, Dave, I wasn't trying to insinuate anything, just acknowledging that there's different forces at work that a fund manager might go, oh my gosh, June 28th, I'm going to divest all this money. It would mean a whole different scenario for the budget if they did it 4 days later. So there's decisions at the end of a biennium that I think are just important to acknowledge that it's there. But I just want to be clear that I'm not insinuating anything. I think the fund managers have done a great job. It's just if they have a June 15th market correction, there's some interesting timing at the end of a biennium.
Mr. Rauschenberger brings up a good, because, you know, not that investors, but they do have a Hippocratic oath of, you know, a fiduciary responsibility of when, you know, politically might be what we want, but fiduciary wise, is it something that they should do? And that you bring up an interesting kind of dilemma in putting these artificial dates, because truthfully, that is something that I've been questioning, you know, because this, like this 173, let's use it for that, you know, that was identified back in September. But say we do, from my understanding, the timing wise, we won't know this number for sure till probably September. You know, and stuff on it, you know, so you won't, you know, even if you do, you know, we got June 30th as a magic date. Well, that's just a date on the calendar for most people, you know, for the state of North Dakota. That's when this money's due, you know, $200 million at least is due in the, you know, that's in the statute, you know, but it's the Constitution has it too, that any earnings get deposited into the general fund, you know, so you take a look at, you know, and that's the other thing too on initiated measures and everything else. So we've got, and I don't know, I'll get you, I might as well ask you, or Treasurer Schmidt, with the way the Constitution, with the two-thirds House, even if initiated measure, there is no ability for initiated measure to spend money out of the legacy fund without a vote of the legislature. State who you are and get it on the record.
Tom Schneider, State Treasurer. Senator Dodson-Rod, in relationship to your earlier question about earnings before that date, I went to the Attorney General to get clarification on that in November of 2017 to make sure that we had everything laid out, and I am happy to provide that that opinion to you on this committee just to give you clarity in that discussion. Commissioner Rauschenberger, I think one of the advantages that we have as you relate to trying to cash out if we need to a portion of that is the legacy fund averages $55 million a month in cash deposits. And so those are dollars that this team in the work that they do can utilize that cash influx in order to provide cash without divesting to the level that may or may not be. There are a lot of questions, and as a member of the State Investment Board, I have several. And so I look forward to the discussion as we continue to move forward. You know, I'm in communication with Wyoming, I'm in communication with Colorado, I'm in communication, Angela Rodell and I are very good friends from Alaska, and there's a lot of discussion relating to what's next and what are you going to do, because we don't have a policy relating to, we have a two-year investment policy on a portion of this principle, because we never know in 2 years will the legislative body go in and have that vote to spend a portion of the principal. So we have to, as fiduciaries, in order to honor the Constitution, without a spending policy or without a savings policy of knowing you're not going to spend the principal, we are dedicated to spend or to invest that portion of principal with the fact that it, a portion of it could be gone in 2 years. So those are all things that reflect on what we do and what also goes into the asset allocation of what we do when they come in, because we don't know what's going to happen, because we don't have, nobody's ever told us. You know, we just go by, okay, what if, what if, what if. And so that's something that I think, I hope will come to some fruition over this next legislative session. Did that help with some of the...
Well, it continues the conversation.
Senator Klein, I have a cheat sheet for you, too, that we used for the North Dakota Chamber of Commerce when we did the panel discussion on Legacy Fund that has some numbers that we distributed working with Rio in our office, and I've got a copy of that for you when you leave today.
Go ahead, Senator Klein.
Well, and, you know, Mr. Chairman, Dave, I think kind of piggybacking on the commissioner's comments, you know we need $200 million at the end of the biennium. I'm assuming that our folks are looking at that saying, well, the market in May is just tremendous and we're hedging against the downturn. Do you have enough flexibility in the law to be able to say, okay, it's time to sell that, set it aside, because we need it, because you know that's what your investment advisor would probably do. We're going to sell that now, or to hedge against a downturn. Do you have that flexibility,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Klein? We're blessed with strong cash inflows recently, $60-65 million a month. We are invested in predominantly public equities and public debt, which is highly liquid, and the ability to harvest in a short amount of time gives us the wonderful opportunity to have that flexibility. So I don't believe there's, in my opinion, okay. I invite any other discussion if there's any other concerns, but no, we're blessed with a sizable pool. I mean, you say $200 million opposite $5.5 to $6 billion, it's relatively small. You weigh that off the fact that we're getting $65 million a month in on an inflow basis gives us a wonderful a bit of flexibility to be able to do it. Okay. So
the minutes should reflect that Darren nodded yes.
Okay, most appropriately.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to, committee, is the definition of earnings, and it's always been that, you know, of what goes into the general fund, because the Constitution says earnings will go into the general fund. And I think that's where the conversation needs to take place, is to what, you know, because when you set a set number, and we could use it like we do with, you know, we've used $300 million of oil money, you know, I mean, now we're up to $400 million, you know, you could set, you know, and you bring up the percentage, you know, it's a discussion I think we're going to have, though, that if we're going to appropriate X number of dollars, that we should be relatively assured that it's going to be there. You know, I'd like to see it where we do come up with more, and then we appropriate the dollars that are in a bank or in the bank, instead of trying to guess in the next 2 years where we're going to be, so we don't have to play the games that we play, you know, and stuff on it. It, you know, it's numbers is what it is, and that's what it'd be nice to get into that type of situation. I don't know if we'll ever do that or not, because we seem to have an ability to spend future money pretty easy, and that's what gets you in trouble, especially in these developments. It is. So anyways, anything else, committee, that questions? Yeah, well, like I said, we'll probably have a meeting sometime in towards March, and we'll talk about that and stuff on it. We'll see how things go.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, just based on your comment, if you look back at the legislative history relating to the development of the Legacy Fund, that was the legislative intent when the fund was created, is to not pre-spend the earnings, yeah, but to have the earnings deposited into the general fund at the end of the biennium in preparation for the next biennium. Yeah. And the precedent now has been set, and we've been cash flowing that $200 million in the general fund for this current biennium. But that is the legislative intent, and you can go back and you can see that for yourself.
I think the members of the committee understand that. It's just that it's to get it for the rest of the members of the legislature.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a gentle reminder, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, committee, we've kind of run over our, if there's any other interested persons that need. If not, like I said, I think we'll probably sometime we'll see how things progress here this session, but probably after crossover, probably have another meeting and see where we're at with this. And that'll be the call of the chair for that date, but I think we'll all be up here. It's kind of a captive audience here for the going for the next 4 months. So with that, entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second? Okay. Any negative? Okay. Motion passes.